does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I could take the green flag tomorrow and feel like I'm ready, you know, after running 40-ish laps the other day. So, no, I still feel like there's a ton left to learn, and although I learned some the other day, like I said, I don't know how how it's going to represent itself to racing conditions. So I'm not taking too much from the day, but it was just good to, for me, it was good to get out there and just see what an Indy car looked like from behind it, and see what an Indy car coming in my mirror looked like, and feeling a little bit of dirty air, coming up pit lane with cars on pit lane and people on pit lane, like stuff like that was more good than just like driving the car, I guess. So it's all the other little details that I just need to get the hang of before I think I'm really comfortable. And I don't know if I'll ever feel like I'm really comfortable before we get to the race.
Last Wednesday, 34 began on track preparation for the 108th Indianapolis 500, including a much heralded rookie you just heard from. Kyle Larson was second quick behind defending winner Joseph Newgarden. And up next, maybe the second biggest race of the year, the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, is this Sunday. And it will almost certainly include another driver making his IndyCar debut. Hello, welcome. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis, nationwide via the podcast, 107.5thefan.com. Not just nationwide, worldwide. That's why it's the World Wide Web. Although I'm going to need to learn more about Web3 and blockchain via Polkadot. See, that sponsorship is working. I have no idea what that means, but blockchain sounds good. I don't know if it's Alice in Chains, Man in the Box, block, whatever. It's all good. It's all good. So I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is with us. Landon Koons is in our Indianapolis studios tonight. So we have a lot to get into. Unfortunately, not as much to unpack from the test at IMS last weekend. And then we have one of the big ones, the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, coming up Sunday afternoon here on radio, I think. Although we're going to need to see a Pacers playoff schedule, so that could make some things. So you're going to need to check your local listings for radio coverage. The Pacers avoided the play-in tournament, which is going on tonight. So that's why we have this. So moving forward for our show as well, check your local listings. I believe the normal playoffs, so that's when they get it down to 8 seeds in each conference, 8 teams, they are the 6th seed, and I believe that starts Saturday. That's the way it always traditionally did, is that every team will play either Saturday or Sunday game one. And unless you've seen something different, Kurt, I have not seen, and I'm sure they wait until they find out who they're going to play, because they maximize the matchups. You know, the marquee matchup is going to get the best television window.
So you're correct. First of all, good to see you. Good to hear from you. And it's a big week, as you mentioned, probably the second biggest race weekend of the year. Obviously, qualifying weekend at Indy is huge, and opening weekend is huge, and the GMR Grand Prix, big deal, obviously. But Long Beach is kind of an animal of in and of itself. As for the Pacers go, they're going to play their first game on Sunday. That we know. The playoffs start on Saturday, but we don't have a game time yet for the Sunday. I think we'll know that after tomorrow night. So you're right. Check local listings. And that is important, not only for the listeners, but also for the host, because we'll need to see if the Pacers play. If they play Sunday, Tuesday in Milwaukee, then obviously that might alter the schedule for next week. So all things to keep in mind. But, you know, this is one of the favorite race weeks of the year for me, and it starts a really busy stretch for the NTT IndyCar Series. We raced this weekend in Long Beach, next weekend at Barber Motorsports Park, a week off. And then it gets us rolling to what I believe, I figured, 7 race weekends in the next 8. So a lot of activity. We come back from May. We start May, and then we roll into the GMR Grand Prix and qualifying at Indy and the Indy 500 and Detroit and then Road America. So it's going to be crazy, and it'll be crazy for the teams. We've been waiting a long time, and we're finally going to get some real momentum in terms of consistency and the action on the racetrack, and it's going to come fast and furious.
And it's not like people have been doing nothing. Now, we haven't had as much content to consume as we'd all love to have in a perfect scenario, but the team's been busy.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's been, whatever, 6 weeks since St. Pete. Actually, no, that's about right. 5 or 6 weeks, depending on how you want to look at it. But you had the exhibition weekend, which was a full weekend of content. And they've had, not everyone, but there have been at least 3 other test events. There was the hybrid test with everybody who hasn't done the hybrid at IMS on the road course. Then there was a test at IMS for some other teams. There was the Indy 500 test. Oh, there was since then we've had a test at Texas with rookies, and I think I'm even forgetting something else. I think somebody tested somewhere else at some point. There was the Barber test. That's been since St. Pete. Yeah, yes, that was after Sebring, because I remember discussing whether Callum Ilott was going to be there or not.
Yeah, there's certainly been a lot going on. The team's preparing for one thing. You know, I don't know if we're quite ready to get into it, but just, you know, the one thing we didn't have was enough real action on the oval. You know, we were hoping for 2 full days. Teams didn't get that much. In fact, the second day washed out altogether. The first day was abbreviated by inclement weather. So not that the teams don't work, because the setup is all the same, but, you know, there largely was not a lot of things to do. And as for that second day and why it wasn't maybe pushed back another day, teams needed to get their cars ready for Long Beach. A lot of those cars that were used in the open test last week at Indy were going to be the cars used at Long Beach. Some of the teams were able, the one-offs, if you will, the Kyle Larsons, et cetera, were able to use their Indy 500 cars, Takuma Sato, another one, but most of the teams were using Long Beach cars. So they have to go back and do a lot of work. And so while jokesters like yourself and me, we do things during the week, but it's not the schedule of the teams and the team members and the crew guys and gals that are, you know, working to turn cars around. It's a big stretch this spring part of the season. And, you know, now from a competition standpoint, you're going to factor in not only preparing cars, but you might be repairing cars. So preparing and repairing is going to happen pretty fast and furious, and travel included. So going to be a busy stretch. If you're a spouse of a crew member, take a deep breath and accept that your marriage is going to look a little different here for the next few weeks.
Or celebrate.
Or celebrate.
Have the house to yourself here very soon.
It's not the way it was viewed at my house, by the way, but I understand.
And if you're wondering, well, what if they would have waited until Friday? That was a question, and we kind of gathered that nobody wanted that circumstance. I don't even think they would have done that had it totally washed out Wednesday. I think in that scenario, they might have done something like we saw, was it 2 or 3 years ago, that they came back for a day in early May. And I still want to ask some more people about that. I think a lot of us would enjoy that, but I don't know that it helps the teams any either, because, you know, one, some don't want to run their Indy 500 car, so that's more changing back and forth from road to street course and so forth. You know, even if it was 3 days before Indy 500 practice, they might still want to use their backup car to not take any chance of something going awry. And I don't know if the engineers really like to have some time to really chew on things or what the scenario is there. But, you know, I think a lot of us from a fan standpoint would love to see just extra time in May. This is an aside. If for some reason the Indy GP ever goes away. And I'm not hinting at anything that I think it is. But if for some reason you decided, no, we want to make a road course race, you know, as the championship race, or run it again with NASCAR and only want to come to Indy one time, I think that could be something you could consider doing on that weekend, and doing, you know, a proper opening day on Saturday for Indy 500 practice and the Oval, combine it with a big concert, or maybe you combine it with IMSA. Maybe it's IMSA runs on Saturday. It's big, big work for the grounds crew and the facilities people to turn it from road course to oval. But those are just kind of some things if you wanted to do that for down the road. One other thing I found interesting was learning that some teams were using their road course car that they need for Long Beach and not their super speedway car because they don't have all the parts they need yet for the super speedway car. This is a new kit essentially this year with the hybrid. It was meant to be a little bit lighter to help combat the added weight, significant added weight that the hybrid was going to bring on. And there are always updates, safety and otherwise, year to year. And I heard Graham Rahal mention this, that, you know, we didn't run the super speedway car because we had no choice. We didn't have enough parts to run the super speedway car. And the way he was explaining it, and I think you were in the room, was maybe, Takuma had the super speedway car in part because he has no other car. And then the others had some updates, not all the updates, and so forth.
Well, that's why, you know, I really stress to those that were around to consume the information. I don't want to say I labored on it, but I just didn't want people to draw conclusions based on what we saw in that test. And even, you know, even had it not been an abbreviated session, we weren't playing with all the same kind of apples. In fact, you know, some people were basically in an orange situation, or pears, you know, in terms of, were they using Long Beach car? Were they using part of their speedway package where they had all of it? Did they have Indy Motors? There was just so many variables in terms of the equipment. And then the abbreviated nature of the first day, meaning Wednesday of last week, it just didn't create any scenario where you could draw conclusions. I don't know how you could say, well, Joseph Newgarden is off to a good start. Kyle Larson is off. Kyle Larson may be the one benefactor from the Wednesday session, because anytime he gets, and I guess the same is true of Nolan Siegel and some others that have not run the 500 or Indy on the Oval, is that anytime that they get in the car, and the rookie orientation and refreshers that were done, those are the benefactors. Everybody else, they didn't learn a whole lot, and we shouldn't draw too much conclusion from it.
So that will lead us into our first Twitter question. In the Xbox, Elijah Poe asks, at Kevin Lee 23 at Kurt Cavan, how much should people look into the stats for the Indy 500 open test? Do these testing numbers matter significantly, or are they just a baseline test? Everything you said is true, and it's not true. This does matter, but you're right. You can't put a whole lot into it. So let's look at who was up near the top. And for all the reasons you say, there was not nearly enough time. They were just doing baseline tests. They didn't really get into it a whole lot. They didn't get to run as much in packs and get anywhere close. What do we have, about 3 hours of running?
And not really even that, because some of it was rookie and refresher time.
Yeah. So it didn't come close. You know, my magic number is I wanted five. I think if they would have gotten to five, they would have felt fine and everybody would have been good. And as you said, almost two of the hours, there were a couple of breaks for raindrops, were devoted to the rookies, which was important that at least they got through all that. And the people that really needed to get comfortable and get acclimated again did that. But if you look at the top and the teams that were up there, so if we say it doesn't matter, but let's look who's up there. Penske, McLaren, Ganassi, Andretti, Penske, Carpenter, Andretti with the Meyer Shank entry. That's the top 10. Any surprises there?
No, and they're going to be on the top whether we run 1 hour or 15 hours.
It's a reminder that these are the people that are going to be the best. We just don't know which of them is the best.
That's what I'm getting at. You just can't draw a whole lot of conclusions. Now, I would tell you, there's always been this conflict. We spend so much time at Indianapolis talking about how sensitive the racetrack is, the wind, the temperature, the track temperature, all these variables that are so important to tenths of a mile an hour. And then we go run an April test when it's usually crisp, temperatures in the high 50s to low 60s. The sun is in a different position than it will be. The wind is a variable that is always changing. And you wonder how much that really translates to May in the first place. But you heard Joseph Newgarden say not only last year after the race, but he has continued to say in the offseason, he's talked about the Indy 500 win, was how important that April test was for him last year in just getting ready. So I really think there is significant benefit, but I just don't know that they had enough time on this particular year to quantify a benefit. And I don't think we'll hear the race winner at the 2024 race say, oh, that April test was important because it did X, Y, or Z, unless it's a newcomer, unless it's a Kyle Larson, a rookie, somebody who got track time and confidence building that they might not have gotten this quickly in the calendar. So those people benefited, but I'm not sure everybody else, the Ganassis, the Penske's, the McLarens, and the Carpenters in particular, they're going to be fast. We know that. It doesn't take any test in April to prove that.
I think it confirms that they're still good. And Newgarden, for the fourth year in a row, was the fastest on this test. And this still does not tell us if they're going to qualify better. That's the priority right now. A team that never rests on their success, they don't want to take a chance again to try to win the race from 17th. They want to be in the top 10. They want to have pace in that circumstance, which they have not had for the last several years. But the race cars, Newgarden has said this, McLaughlin has said this, that the race cars have been fine, which is what we got a little bit of an indication in limited laps in that scenario. Same for McLaren, same for Ganassi. I'm sure Andretti is one of those trying to get better. They would have liked to have had some more time. Graham Rahal thinks they're on the brink. Felt like it, and I talked to him walking along pit lane, and then I watched the press conference that he did. And when you ask him some questions as well in that, but he doesn't have full indication yet. There are still some things, but there are some definite things. One that he mentioned was, last year, you're supposed to be able to suck up on the car in front of you, and we just couldn't do that. We did not gain the aerodynamic benefit from the draft at 6 or 7 seconds back, and I felt it this time. So he was cautiously optimistic that they had made the right path. And then if you want to go to the other end of things, and it's really hard right now, with 34, 35, let's say Abel is the 35th car. And if we had to pick out the four or five that are most likely to be question marks, and we probably have quite a few of them at the bottom of this, and some of it may be already, I would not normally include Dreyer and Reinbold in that category, but somebody has to be, and I guess you put the team that doesn't do it full time. But maybe they start out on that list this year, because I think this circumstance hurt them more than anyone else. Ryan Hunter-Reay ran 7 laps. Luckily, he ran for the team last year, so this is not all new. But I also know that, he felt they were okay last year, but there were a lot of things that I think he was probably helping them with. This is where we can get to the next level. But they had a lot of electrical issues, and it's essentially new car issues because there are updates to these cars. It's not just the car has been sitting and you run it. It's been totally rebuilt, and it's the first time that it's on track. Connor Daly got more laps than that. He got 22, but that's still not a massive amount for someone in that circumstance. You look at the others near the bottom. I think you have to put your rookies in there that are 19 years old Kiffin Simpson and Nolan Siegel that don't have massive experience. I fully expect Kiffin Simpson to be fine. I don't think he'll be in the last row shootout because of the team that he's with. But if you have to include somebody, you're going to put him and Nolan in there. Nolan Siegel, Dale Coyne Racing is always strong at the Indy 500, or at least always solid. And they still have Michael Cannon and other talented engineers. You know, you'd put Augustine Canapino in there, who's done limited oval races. And we all know that there was a problem, at least one driver felt, with one of their cars last year. Hopefully he didn't get Callum Ilott's car and chassis for this go-around. He's near the back in the limited time. Pietro Fittipaldi, he should be fine, but he's with one of those teams that struggled last year. So he's 30th. Catherine Legg, similar circumstance. Didn't go awesome for her last year. She was the fastest of the Rahal Letterman-Lanigan qualifiers. She's in a new circumstance. You know, the one that would surprise us was Alexander Rossi, 28th. And normally we would not worry about that at all. But if you were watching Peacock, we eavesdropped for a little while. And I haven't talked to Rossi or anyone else around him. Maybe there is no concern. But that just looked like it was not just part of the test plan, and we are not worried about where we're at. It looked like something did not feel super duper at that point. Will that be an issue? No. Now, roundabout way, you know, I still don't know who I'm going to put in that In Jeopardy category. It will probably go back to, does anyone crash Tuesday through Saturday?
Yeah, right.
If they crash and they're not a Penske or a Ganassi or an Andretti or McLaren, and maybe even if they are, depending on who they are, but if they're outside of those four teams, put them real high on the list if they have to rebuild a car and rebuild confidence.
Just to clarify, who did you say Michael Cannon was working for?
Oh, I'm sorry, he was with Foyt. Yes, thank
you.
Yeah.
Because I think if you're looking at the Team Penske situation, I think Michael Cannon may be more help to Team Penske in their qualifying performance than anything we've seen over the last few years. That new alliance with Foyt and Penske might be more beneficial to Penske than we've given it credit for. So anyway, I would put, you know, as I'm looking at it, and it's very difficult to come up with the people at this point, but I would put the two Dale Coyne cars in that bottom eight, if you will. I don't know who else makes the...
Especially since we just learned they lost Michael Cannon.
Yeah, they just lost Michael Cannon. But, you know, that I think there's multiple teams that could factor in based on you know, the struggles that they have during the practice week. If they start out slow, you know, you hate to publicly say you're rooting for somebody, but man, I hope the Rahal boys and gals don't have to deal with being three cars in the bottom four again. You don't wish that on anybody. You understand that everybody's probably going to have a year when it just doesn't line up for them as well. And hopefully for the Rahal Letterman Lanigan bunch, last year they got their full taste of it and they can kind of move into safety land here a little bit and let somebody else deal with it in 2024. So let's just hope that optimism that Graham showcased at the test is accurate and they can breathe a little easier. I really think, and this is a story I'm going to be working on here in a few weeks, I think the presence of Takuma Sato will be really helpful to Graham. You know, he's got a couple other teammates. Pietro has been at Indy once, you know, doesn't have a lot of oval experience at Indy. You know, and Christian Lundgaard hasn't, you know, doesn't have still enough to really, you know, enough excellence in his tool belt to at Indy to showcase and really help Graham. But I think Sato will really help. I think it'll be a good voice in a room for Graham. And, you know, I think we've heard from drivers say, experienced veteran drivers in particular, that everything emanates from the cockpit. All the decisions that are made, the direction to take, the, you know, it's all interconnected with the driver. And if you've got two drivers who are able to say, no, we need to think this path, I think that's really helpful for Graham. And maybe something, he kind of hinted at it. I'd like to go back and look at the transcript to see how he said it. But he seemed to indicate that sometimes a single voice when you're trying to direct the team isn't enough. And having Sato should help him.
And he's also going to have Kenny Breck.
Yeah, that's good.
They're advising. I was in a conversation with someone. I got released from the booth for a little while and just got to stroll pit lane right before it rained and was talking to someone when Kenny walked by. So I didn't get a chance to stop him and other than just wave and say hello. And I think you asked the question in the press conference about Kenny being there. So certainly he can help the younger drivers, but Graham was very adamant that, you know, he's been a close friend of the family for a long time. And he's going to be someone I can bounce ideas off, and he'll be back in May and can kind of be a conduit between them.
Well, he's a driver coach. That's his role. And, you know, just somebody else to offer opinions and, again, support Graham and now Takuma and the other drivers as well. But as the information is emanating from the cockpit and connected through the cockpit, to have just another veteran voice, you know, Kenny hasn't run these cars and it's been a while since he's been in the series, but he's still, you know, you can learn this from being around successful drivers, and Mears always comes to mind, that, and obviously he's the as good as it ever got at Indy, but, you know, you can have a discussion with Rick about how to set up the car and run the car at Indy, and it doesn't matter what was 1993 or 2003 or 2023. The basic premise is the same, and which is why you see these engineers who have been successful and drivers as well. It just continues, and it doesn't matter if the driver is 23 years old or 43 years old. Once you kind of figure it out, you're pretty good most of the time. And that's why we think Sato always is a help to whichever program he's in. Guys like Michael Cannon on the engineering side and Craig Hampson usually have fast cars. So we watch to see where those people are working. And then we can draw some conclusions about how their teams and their cars should perform.
We mentioned 34, 35. We still don't have anything definitive on, at least as we chat today, on an Able entry. And maybe that's come out since we've started the show. So we'll circle back and we'll have a late update at the end of the show to see if there's anything new on that front. We need definition on the number 6 entry for Arrow McLaren and what's happening there from an official capacity, which may or may not have come out since we started talking. So we'll circle back to that. And much more. And we'll get into what is coming up most immediately next, and that's the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. We'll talk about that, the TBDs associated with that event, and more next. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside.
It's race week again for the NTT IndyCar Series coming up Sunday afternoon. The Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. It's going to be somewhere on the radio. IndyCar radio, check your local listings, depending on Pacers conflicts with 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. We know it's going to be on Peacock, and we know it's going to be on USA Network coming up this weekend. You probably have it if you pay anything for television, whether it's a cable company or DirecTV or Dish. Does Dish still exist? Dish Network?
Or YouTube TV.
Or yeah, I know it's on YouTube TV, but look for it. You can find it. That's as far as cable channels go. USA is really high up on the list. What's our airtime? It's
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock Eastern time, noon local time. I think there's a full pre-race show. I think it's around 45 minutes, so tune in for that. But you never know. Maybe it's hurried up. I haven't seen a minute by minute, whether it's a 30-minute or a 40-minute pre-race show coming up this weekend as we get set to get very, very busy, as you mentioned, with Barber coming up the following week at Birmingham, then an off weekend, then the Indy Road Course, then Indy 500 practice and qualifying, the Indy 500, Detroit Grand Prix, Road America, then a weekend off before you roll again throughout the summertime.
So, by the way, driver starts your engines slated for 12:38 local time and green flag at 12:45. So there's your 45 minutes that you were anticipating and spoke of. And so You'll have a lot of time to set the stage on what is truly a great event. If you haven't been to Long Beach, this is the 40th presentation from an IndyCar standpoint, and it will be outstanding.
And we get back at it after just one points-paying race, where you certainly learn some things. Another race on a road course where you learn some things that may not be applicable to this event, but could apply to Barber, could apply to the road course. Everything impacts everything to some extent. When we last left you, and I'm going to watch St. Pete again on the plane to just kind of refresh my memory, but what stands out is Chevy was awesome, and that had not been the case. It had been since 22, which is not a long time ago, but like seven races, something like that, since they had won on a street course. And they went 1, 2, 3, 4 after Honda had swept all five last year. So we are going to learn, was this a one event weekend? Was there something about St. Pete? Because while this is a street race, drivers have always told me what works at St. Pete does not necessarily work at Long Beach, and vice versa. The kind of feeling was Honda has had some sort of advantage in coming out of slow corners, and that's more likely to be an impact on a street race. And you certainly are coming out of, boy, this has to be the slowest corner.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, at Long Beach. So Chevy may have cut that gap to some extent, or they may have found other things like compliance and balance and going over bumps that worked better for them at St. Pete. So that's going to get us something, because this is not the last street race of the year. We're going to be doing this a few times this year. Is it a Penske thing? Is it a Chevy thing? That's kind of like step one to learn this weekend.
So just to further emphasize the importance of getting off this very slow corner, I'm just running through my mind. There isn't a longer front straightaway or a longer straight than Long Beach. I mean, even though it's not straight, it curves, but it is on the gas for an extraordinary long period of time. So that, you know, further exacerbates the weakness that you might have if you're not good coming off that little hairpin, which is really, I think, one of the coolest visuals in the sport. And one thing I've never done, they have that little photographer's area that they stand literally right next to the cars. I'm always fascinated by how close, you know, humans are to the race cars. Because when you stand in that little photographer's area at the hairpin, you almost could stand there and reach out and touch the cars. That's how close they are to that barrier. Anyway, so it's just really important with that long straightaway curvature, as it does have, to be good there. And then, you know, just then it comes down to that fountain area and just getting through that. So it's really important to get off the hairpin, is my point.
Some of the other notes that I have to look into this weekend, there was conversation, and I think I brought this up on this show before, about Ganassi, you know, and we like to immediately react and have the answers to things. And even though it's one of 17 events, we think we know something after 1/17th of that. We really don't, but you learn something, and it's what we do. We talk and we react. What is Ganassi? Not as dominant as they were. Some would immediately add in, hey, they've gone to five cars and they've got three rookies, two plus one. Only at the Indy 500 is Marcus Armstrong a rookie, but he's still a young driver. Is that impacting them? Are they stretched too thin when it's so hard to find crew people? Did that impact things? And is that why they were sixth, ninth, and so on? And it's possible that does have an impact, but I'm not ready to go there yet, and I still contend that in different circumstances, if that caution doesn't come out, at least one of their drivers, Pelot or Dixon, is on the podium, if not both, and maybe even one of them wins. I don't know that anybody had anything for Newgarden in this event. I doubt they did, but one of them would have been closer, because they always maximize long runs and saving the tires. So it's too early to say where Ganassi is. We will get a better read this weekend.
Agreed. And then the fact they came back and just destroyed people with Pelot at Thermal Club. And while, yeah, we're saying non-points. That was still performance. Everybody still was still, everyone was still trying. It wasn't like anybody was like, yeah, it's not worth my time to really show anything here. Everybody was trying, and he beat him by pretty much a country mile, as the sport's parameters go. So he was outstanding. And you're right. I know that in the case of Dixon and Pullot, they were about one more lap. If that caution had gone just a little bit longer, or had it stayed green just a little bit longer on that first stint, they would have cycled to the front with the overcut, and they would have been in great shape. So I don't put much stock in St. Pete in determining Ganassi's future for the rest of this season. I would also say last year, Pullot finished eighth in St. Pete and destroyed the competition the rest of the way. He was sixth, so he's two spots ahead of where he would have been a year ago.
Another thing, and I'm basically sharing the notes that I had in the conference call today, because we always kind of go around the horn and talk about things we're watching for, and we almost always all have much of the same thing. You know, we talked Honda Chevy and a lot of other things. And one of the things I mentioned too was each week we learn a little bit more if this new environment for Felix Rosenqvist is what's going to allow him the opportunity to be what a lot of people have thought he was going to be, and a consistent front runner. That's why Ganassi hired him in the first case. That's why McLaren hired him from them, and now he's getting a chance to kind of validate what originally was thought of him, and also help the Andretti program too. And there's more of it going that way than there has been the last couple of years in their relationship with Andretti Technologies, with Meyer Shank. So Froh was not only good at St. Pete, and he was good at Thermal as well. So we get a little bit more of a sense of that for this coming weekend. And then what also comes to mind too is, you know, I know people are always surprised, and I don't know what the approach should be when we're talking 2025, two races into 2024. But if you want to know what the paddock is talking about, they are talking about 2025. You have to multitask. You have to do what you are tasked to do for that coming weekend. But if you're a driver, you're always looking ahead. And if you're a team, you're always looking ahead, because 2025 in some ways is going to be decided in May. And if you're someone that is not set, you're either trying to keep your spot, give yourself other options, or maybe you're trying to move to a better option. The time is now. It's this weekend. It's Barber. It's the Indy Road Course. Those might be your last chances. There will be some other chances, but those are your last guaranteed chances for all of the premier seats being open, and they may not even be open now. Would it shock you if McLaren has already agreed to something with Christian Lundgaard?
No.
I'm going to tell you, it's possible that that is the case. And we are down to one seat next year. That doesn't necessarily mean he's replacing Rossi, because they have probably two seats that are open.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. What I don't know, that the other one is, it'll be interesting to see how quickly, maybe not publicly, but how quickly Newgarden makes a decision, because he's the domino. He starts everything, or at least from a you know, philosophical or reality standpoint, if you were McLaren or Andretti or Ganassi, and you'd like to have a driver that you don't currently have, you're going to want to know what's going on with Newgarden. You'd want to hear from Newgarden or his representation. Yep. So Newgarden's the domino that starts everything in a kind of an ideal world. But, you know, how quickly we know, or how quickly Joseph knows what he's going to do or not do, will impact things greatly.
And if he did decide to leave, I remember this with Pagenaud. He was adamant that he could not say anything until after the season was over. Even when they weren't really inviting him back, that he was moving on to Meyer Shank. And I got the impression there is strong language in a Penske contract that you do not say anything about what you're doing. So if we see a lot of empty holes and no one confirming anything, you know, oftentimes the earliest confirmations. So if these deals are done in May, we might get a report. We might get rumors. We're probably not getting a firm report until July, and we're not getting an announcement until July, August at the earliest, if not until after the season. But the people involved are going to know about that. But you're right, that's the big domino, and that's the massive question. As we've said many times, no one leaves Team Penske by their own choice. So would he be the first? And the reason he would do that would namely be because someone else might offer him twice the money. And I think the candidates are Andretti Global and Arrow McLaren. I'd be surprised if Ganassi's in that mix because they already have two really high-paid drivers. The only way that changes is if Scott Dixon wakes up tomorrow or on June 3rd and says, you know what, Chip, I've decided this is it. And yeah, that'd be the only way. And by the way, do I expect that? I do not.
Well,
maybe that change. If he wins the Indy 500, maybe he does say that's enough. Sure. That'd be the only thing that I think would change things. But I don't even know if that would. I don't know that I would, you know, if I'm within 7 or 8 wins of AJ Foyt and I've won my second Indy 500 and I'm on the best team, I don't know I'd walk away from that at 43 years old.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he runs for a little longer. Of course, the other thing that's entirely possible is we're in the middle of a show in a week or two, and then Alex Palou has another issue that we must deal with. And then we'll see if...
Surely not. Now, there are more issues to be dealt with, legal issues, but I don't expect it to impact where he is driving. It's only
Agreed.
Going to impact Alex Palou's bank account. And, you know, we'll see if in Victory Lane there is an invoice there waiting for him. But that's still to be determined. You know, no one has said, I'd work at a settlement, but I think one side wants this to be protracted as long as possible to maybe see if it impacts Alex Palou. I don't think it impacts Alex Palou,
no,
right?
No, I don't either. He's such
I'd go for a settlement.
He's such a cool customer. And in fact, you know, I was just thinking about, and we just watched Scottie Scheffler win the Masters, and how he continues at his own excellence, regardless of what's going on around him. Yeah, last year at the end of the Masters, he four putts the last hole because he's kind of lost his focus. But you just don't see that from Scottie Scheffler, and I'm not saying that Alex Palou is the world number one driver the way Scheffler is from a golfing standpoint. But Alex Palou's pretty cool and focused and just methodically goes about beating people down, as he really has done the last 3 years. And he had not had the contract issue 2 years ago. He's quite conceivably a three-peater right now because he's been that good.
You know, back on who really needs to impress some things early on, what's Rinus VK? What does he want to do? Does he want to stay at Ed Carpenter Racing? Or would he like to see something else? He is someone that I expect is a free agent. I don't know that certainly.
I care.
Does the team want him? So are they in that same boat that we'd like to impress upon him to stay? I'll throw this out there right now. When we get to David Malukas, and we'll tell you what's going on in that situation coming up, but I wouldn't rule out David Malukas driving for Ed Carpenter Racing in 2025. There was a lot of smoke about HMD and his dad partnering with them in the future. So that could be a situation. As awful as all of this is for David Malukas, I don't think this is going to be one of those scenarios where he never really gets a chance. I still think he's going to drive a McLaren car this year. I don't know if it's going to be every race. Once he is cleared, it probably will be, but it's possible at this point that they just decide, you know what, we're going to kind of go race per race and take a look at Teo Pourchaire, take some more looks at Callum Ilott, and take a better look at Callum Ilott or at David Malukas, and then we'll decide when we get into July who is going to finish this season. Because of the circumstance, we now have the opportunity to do that. But worst case scenario for David Malukas, he has been someone that has been funded, and that goes a long way. This is why this is different than Oliver Askew. Unfortunately for Oliver Askew, he got hired one time Now he was back into probably needing to bring. Actually, he got hired more than one time. He got, you know, one-offs as fill-ins, got a little bit of a chance for Rahal Lederman. Lanigan was in the mix there. But let's just talk business. HMD and David Malukas' dad can take the profits out of their Indy Next operation, where they are running 10 cars and doing well with back-to-back championships. The profit that they are making from that, because that is one of the teams that you need to be on, is probably enough. If they had to, they could go ahead and fund David for another year and not even take it out of the trucking business. So that's the reality there. It's terrible for everybody wants to be a hired driver, but that's the silver lining for David Malukas, and why maybe it's a little easier for him to rest at night is that I'm going to get another chance to show what I can do. And is he what, 21 years old? You know, the future is still bright for David Malukas.
I think he might be 22, but point well taken. Back to Rinus VK for just a minute. I'm more focused on what other teams think of Rinus VK than I am where Rinus VK wants to go.
Correct. And if I'm Ed Carpenter, I also am wanting to know what I want to know what I think of him. And when I say Ed Carpenter, I mean the team in general. And if a lot of people still think there's going to be competition for him,
I'm not so sure.
I think the jury is out. I think it's going to be a wait and see. He's going to need to put some results together to create options for himself.
Is there anybody else? I'm going to look at the driver lineup as I say this. Is there anybody else that we know less about given what we've seen? When you say the jury's out, is there anybody else that we know less, we've made less of a decision on than Rinus VK? I don't know what he is. I mean, he's won a race.
He's been on the podium.
He's
got something, but you're right that, and part of it is people are asking, is it Rinus or is it the team? Didn't work for Connor there. They brought in Ryan Hunter-Reay. Didn't work for Ryan Hunter-Reay. So he's going to be judged versus Christian Rasmussen too, which doesn't tell you everything because he is a rookie, a very talented and heralded rookie, but he is a rookie.
We know this much. We know he's been great at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I say great. He's qualified on the front row.
He's been fast.
Like one of 16 people to do it three straight years in history. He's been very good in qualifying at Indy. He has won on the road course. And he's been really competitive on the road course. But aside from Indianapolis, and I think one strong finish at Barber Motorsports Park, again, is it team? Is it driver? And I just go look through the list, and, you know, maybe the only person I can say that we know less about is Felix Rosenquist, because we have such high expectations for him, and obviously really good teams have employed him.
Well, we know more about Felix Rosenquist.
We probably do, but I'm saying that's one we're kind of waiting, but he hasn't taken.
Calamila would be in that category for somebody that's been around that we want to see what he is, and clearly McLaren wants to see what he is.
But those are a couple of the names. That's my point. Yep. And Rinus,
and that's a big free agent next year too. Ilott is in that mix. And so on. All right, we're over time in this one. We'll preview hour two and more coming up next on Trackside.
Hi, this is David Malukas, and you're listening to Trackside.
Coming up in the next hour, we need to get into the entry list, because it's always fluid at this point. And for the very next event at Long Beach, we'll tell you about that. There's a new team coming to IndyCar with very strong credentials. What does that mean? In a lot of manners, from pit space, engine allocation, and more. We'll do that. Some more of your X and Twitter questions all coming up in hour two, Trackside. 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Scott Dixon, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Hour two, Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis as we get set for the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach for NTT IndyCar coming up this weekend. One of the coolest weekends of the year because of the pictures. That's a lot of it, isn't it, Kurt?
Yes.
I know most people listening, certainly in Indianapolis, will never get to go. That's why we are so spoiled. But it's the way I feel about the Monaco Grand Prix. It's a terrible race. Long Beach is a better race than Monaco. I'll never get to go to Monaco for many reasons. It's the same weekend as the Indy 500, almost always. And even if not, I cannot afford it. So I'm not going, but I like watching it. I like watching the boats, even though I know I would never be allowed on those boats. And that's kind of the way I feel. And everybody's different, but I like pretty water in the background. That's why I like St. Pete. And I like Long Beach. So that's what stands. The fountain. The fountain is just an iconic view of, really? They're going around a roundabout in race cars?
You know what's interesting about that roundabout and the fountain is that to get – this is so contradictory to what you're just describing with the ocean or the water and the, you know, the scenery of Southern California is that to watch the – the roundabout, the fountain area, you're basically standing in a parking garage. You know, there's a parking garage right there. So it's interesting that, you know, you never really see the view from the fountain back to the parking garage, but, you know, from the parking garage to the fountain, it's a spectacular view. So anyway, that's just a little aside for you. But you know what I like about Long Beach, in addition to what you just described, and this goes to the Indy 500 as well, is there are not flukes that win Long Beach. You look at the drivers, we've had 39 of these IndyCar races at Long Beach over the years. 15 drivers have accounted for almost all of those drivers or all those wins. And those 15 drivers are all or soon became IndyCar Series champions. Let me read you the list. Mario Andretti, 3 wins. Michael Andretti, Alan Sir Jr., 6 wins. Danny Sullivan, Paul Tracy, Jimmy Vassar, Alex Zanardi, Juan Pablo Montoya, Sebastian Bourdais, 3 times. Will Power twice, Dario Franchitti, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Scott Dixon, Simon Pagenaud, and Joseph Newgarden. Those, over the last 40 years, have been, I mean, I'm struggling to think, you know, the only two names, and there's probably a couple others, who were dominant in their era but didn't win at Long Beach, Rick Mears, Bobby Rahal. Those are two, you know, since this race started in 84.
Have you got the list in front of you of winners?
Yeah.
Are there any winners that weren't really good? You know, I know some would say Mike Conway didn't win a lot.
He won twice.
But you know what? Mike Conway is really good, and he just didn't want to do ovals. And if you would have kept him on a good team and only done road and street course racing, Mike Conway would probably have 10 or 15 wins in IndyCar at this point. That's the type of driver that he is. Sato is another one that – he's won the Indy 500 twice, so he's pretty good, and he was in Formula One.
And same with Alexander Rossi, fits the same Takuma Sato mold. They've won about the same number of races in their IndyCar Series career. They've both won Indy. Rossi was in Formula One, just like Sato was, and he's won Long Beach twice. Funny that you would say this, but maybe the only person in the whole Long Beach history, aside from Conway, who is obviously outstanding, but the only two people that you would even say, I don't know about them, Colton Herta, obviously really good, and James Hinchcliffe, an Indy pole winner. So, you know, and they both won 7, 8, 9 races in their careers.
Hinch may have the fewest wins other than Conway.
Yeah.
Hinch won 6, I believe.
I think you're right. So, you know, you're just talking about the best of the best. In fact, the other little stat that I came up with, let me see if I've got that right in terms of if I have this right, I'm going to guess here a little bit. But basically, the first 19 or 20 times this race was held, those were all Indy 500. In fact, it's more like the first 20. I think it's 26 of the first 27 winners at Long Beach either were series champions or soon became. And the only exception to that is Elio Castroneves, a four-time Indy 500 with 31 IndyCar wins and 50 poles. I mean, you're just talking about the best of the best. And that's why I think Long Beach is really a who's who of this sport's history the last 40 years. Very much like Indy in that respect.
So let's talk about who's going to be in the race. And we learned yesterday who is going to be in Dale Coyne's cars and even got a little flip-flopping of numbers. So what we did already know is that Nolan Siegel was going to be entered. And this was one of his four weekends. He just did the thermal test in the number 18 car. It was presented that he was sort of sharing with Jack Harvey. Jack would do, 14 weekends in the 18 car. Siegel would do the ones that don't conflict with his Indy Next title fight. He's won the only race of the season from pole. By the way, there's no Indy Next race this weekend. They return at Barber in Birmingham the next week. So he was set for here, the Indy 500, and Toronto. There was some hope that maybe it would work out for Colin Brown. Or I think from Dale Coyne's standpoint, he was hoping that someone that he liked would bring some funding or a sponsorship along that would help pay the bills. We got to the point where either financially didn't work out, or maybe, as I said before, you know, Colin Brown may have looked at this and said, all right, if I'm not going to, and I don't know what his arrangement was. I don't know if he's getting paid to do this or if it was just, hey, here's the seat. If you want to give it a go, you give it a go. Well, if it was that the circumstance, if you're Colin Brown, it's, no, my job is I'm a professional race car driver, and I get either paid to drive the car or paid to help someone go fast. And this particular weekend, George Kurtz is racing there in an SRO race. That's his teammate, and I don't know this, but I'm going to guess Colin Brown coaches him. This is a single driver event. Probably coaches him on weekends that he's not driving. It's very possible Colin Brown can make more money coaching George Kurtz in an SRO race than driving for Dale Coyne. So while we all would love to drive race cars, at some point you look, okay, what's the future in this? Maybe there's not a whole lot. It's getting tough. And it could be a combination of the team looked at it and said, all right, this is going to be another very difficult task for Colin Brown. He did well, all things considered, but you're still fighting for last. That's where you're going to be. What about this? So it may be a combination of all of them. I have no idea how the deal or how the decision was made, but Jack Harvey is essentially going to fill that slot. And from the Dale Coyne standpoint, makes a lot more sense because he's doing at least 14 races. He's around. He's been helping Nolan Siegel. He's someone with the most experience that you have. You should take advantage of that. And if you want Nolan Siegel to be a part of your long-term future, which you should, because he's good and he has potential budget behind him, you need Nolan Siegel to do well. Best chance for Nolan Siegel to do well is to have a little bit of data from the other car from an experienced driver. So that makes more sense than anything. I don't know whether Colin Brown would have wanted to do this or not. From the team standpoint, it seems like a pretty easy decision if there was no budget available. And who knows? Maybe Jack Harvey's backers came up with a little more budget that helped get him in the other races. And then we have the number flip. Since Jack Harvey has been in the 18, I think this is right, Kurt, he will stay in the 18. Siegel will now go to the 51. He'll be back in the 18, I think, for the Indy 500. Catherine Legg will be in the 51. And there are still many, many open spots, starting with what? Barber Motorsports Park. We only know for this weekend. We do not know who's driving the 51 for every other race the rest of this season other than the Indy 500. Catherine Legg was announced last week. There were rumors that she would do all of the races. That was not a part of the announcement. She is only doing the Indy 500. I presume or guesstimate that there is a chance that she does the other oval races. She also now no longer has an IMSA conflict. There was no reason given, but she is not racing at Long Beach when she goes into the Walk of Fame this weekend. She was replaced with her Acura GTD team this weekend. So she is clear to do other races. So that's where I think things stand at this point. And by the way, Jack Harvey, I put him as the leading candidate to get the drive for them at Toronto. He may do every race this year except the Indy 500.
And thermal, which he sat out, but non-points.
Which doesn't count for points. So
No, I get that.
Just a test weekend.
It was a race weekend and an important one in development and so forth, but he was not in that one. But it was a little confusing that the initial report yesterday was that Siegel was going to be in the 18 and Jack was going to be in the 51. And then later in the day, it
I don't even
switched.
Think it was a report. It was just happy birthday, Jack. And it showed a picture of him, of them putting his name on a race car. And maybe it did show it. Did it show it next to an 18 car? I don't think it even showed a car number.
Well,
but we just assumed since it had been announced that Siegel was driving the 18.
Yeah.
And that's where you get when you assume. So they've swapped that around.
Yeah, so it's, good for Siegel. And I think, Dale Coyne Racing certainly would want to do whatever it can to keep Siegel moving forward. And because I think he's shown a lot of promise very quickly. He was outstanding at Thermal, nearly made the transfer spot. So that will be one to watch. And, his development over the next few races, particularly at Indy, will likely go a long way to how good of a ride he gets moving forward.
Well, when I was mentioning free agents before, Nolan Siegel needs to be listed on those.
Sure.
He's got a chance to bring some scholarship money if he can win the championship. I know it's only one in, but he was already going to be one of the heavy favorites this season. Two, I think he's really good. Three, and this is going to be the quandary for his camp because they know he has the budget. So they're going to ask him, hey, we've got this great seat for you where you can compete, and we'd like you to bring $8 million. That's going to be the ask. So it's going to be up to Nolan and his dad, Mark, who also has driven race cars. Really interesting story. Mark is a very successful business person. Is it venture capital? Is that what I would call it? He's in the money business. He does really well. Menlo Ventures is his company that you've seen on the car. And when Nolan started go-karting when he was a kid, kind of similar to myself and Jackson, I started go-karting with Jackson. Mark did the same with Nolan. Difference is Mark obviously was good enough and had the financial wherewithal to keep doing some things, and he has raced at times in the Michelin Pilot Challenge, a really high-level IMSA series, and he's raced at times with Nolan. So he understands the racing business. They've got smart people around them, but that's what is going to be the ask. He's the dream candidate. He's good, and he can fill in any sponsorship lapses that what we have. So it's going to be, well, how good is he? And what are the options? Someone might just say, we want Nolan and he only needs to bring his helmet. No matter whether someone has the budget or not, that's the goal, to get hired. And Nolan Siegel is on the path to be able to do that. So kind of keep an eye on him moving forward. So that's one team set. It's a travel day for me. I'm actually hosting an event tomorrow night. Celebrating Mario Andretti. So I'm going out early. I am always more open to go to Southern California early than maybe some other venues. So that opened up that chance. So we had to tape this segment earlier in the day. Unless you've seen something new, I have not seen an announcement for who was driving the number 6 Arrow McLaren. Yesterday, we had the announcement that Onsemi is going to be the primary partner, which was with them at times last year. I don't think I've seen that announcement. I do think I know who it is. So maybe it's come out since 12:21 Eastern time as we're speaking at the moment. But I believe, and this is not a large deducement, that Teo Pourchaire, last year's F2 champion, is going to be in the car unless there was some sort of a major snag. Things get announced when things are done, meaning contracts signed. And this is a driver that potentially could be more complicated than others because he drives in the Super Formula Series, full-time job for him there. And he also is a reserve driver in Formula One. So they may want some questions about, there's a Formula One race this weekend. Is he supposed to be there? I don't know. And do they want him to do other races? Do they want him to do Barber? All of those things can factor into that. But, and by the way, if that doesn't happen, I don't know what they're doing. Connor, bring your helmet. Oliver Askew, make sure you're there. Ryan Hunter-Reay, make sure you're there available. But we suspect that Théo Pourchaire, 21-year-old French driver who is very well regarded, has won six races in F2, is going to be in the number six car.
And, you know, just coincidentally, he's raced with a lot of these guys. You think about the guys in our series that have been in F2 with him, Lundgaard, Ilott, there are others. So, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, there actually is some comps to draw from. So he's very good, excuse me.
And I'll bring this up because I had this conversation with James Hinchcliffe. We had a good 6 hours in the car last Friday going up to an event at the Root and Bone restaurant in Northern Indiana, which he is a partner in. By the way, if you, Carb Night, I don't think I've tweeted this yet, and I don't know if the Hinch has either. We are doing a Carb Night event. It's not like what we used to do. This is a ticketed event. It is a charity event, so this is not a freebie. This is a higher level, upper level bourbon tasting kind of thing, and I'll get more details on that. But it's going to be at the Root and Bone in Broad Ripple. And I know I've shared something on LinkedIn. We need to put that out on social media as well. But as we were on the way up, he brought up something that was discussed on the Hinch and Rossi podcast. And they asked, why would you put, if the goal is just to score points and do things, you know, you've got a Ryan Hunter-Reay who knows the track, who's won there. You've got others with more recent experience compared to someone that is, it's going to be tough. I don't care how good Théo Pourchaire is. That's got to be tough. He's not tested an IndyCar. He's not driven an IndyCar. And he's going to start it on a street course. And, you know, while Alexander Rossi can't comment on these things as a member of Arrow McLaren, he was able to share the insight. And essentially it comes down to this. It's upside, right? We know Ryan Hunter-Reay is really, really good. We know what he is. We know what Connor Daly is. We know what Oliver Askew is. We don't really know what Théo Pourchaire is in this environment. So that's the idea. You grade him on a curve. You know, that team is, the six car is not winning the championship this year, but they're probably going to be good enough to stay in the top 22 and collect the leader circle points. If you get to a point later in the year when you're not, that will likely impact who they put in the car moving forward. But for now, their negative can be turned into a positive. They are going to learn to see, maybe we find something. Maybe Théo Pourchaire is the next Alex Palou, and he's going, if he finishes 18th and, you know, he's relatively quick on pace, we can put him in the seat at Barber the very next weekend. They have a choice. Is he going to do that? Is Ilott going to do it? Ilott is available. Then the Indy GP. I have not seen if David Malukas is available. European drivers have done well at the Indy GP. Christian Lundgaard on debut. It is a straightforward course that is pretty easy to size up. Ilott is not available for the GP. They could put him in that seat for the next 3 weekends, I think, before he then has a conflict. And then circling forward too, if you would have asked me Wednesday morning, with Ilott in the test for Malukas, I don't know where Malukas is at. You know, it kind of told us if he wasn't able to do the Indy 500 test with more subtle left-hand turns, he has no chance at Long Beach. And I don't think he has a great chance at Barber either. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he does. If he does, then it might be they wanted to see Callum Ilott, and they had already decided we're going to put Callum Ilott in the car for the Indy 500. But then he doesn't really, and one of the reasons for that would be if you're a young driver in David Malukas and you miss 2 full days of testing, you're just going to be behind. Our best chance to do well is with Callum Ilott, plus we want to learn more about him. But Callum Ilott runs how many laps?
Not enough test to make a difference, in my opinion.
He runs 8 laps.
Yep.
So if you'd have asked me Wednesday morning, I would have said Callum Ilott is running the 6 car for the Indy 500. Now I'm back to, I don't know.
You know,
I'm going to say 50-50. I think there's a good chance. I don't know what Malukas, if he's healthy enough. If he's not healthy enough to run the Indy 500, then this is significantly more severe than we originally thought.
Yep. Or we're led to believe.
And it may just be they're moving on. They have that right, I think.
Yeah. And that's what concerns me from David's point of view. And to your point earlier, you know, if you're David, you'd like to keep this ride, but I think you know you're going to have a ride. So that's interesting. But, you know, I think I would roll with David on an oval, you know, over Eilat. But apparently, you know, they're at least covering their bases. If he wasn't ready to test, they put Eilat in there, and then they didn't get much accomplished with eight laps. So
that's why I think it's maybe more wide open. I think if Eilat would have gotten two full days and compared nicely, you know, and they're going to be able to see things that we don't see.
Sure.
With just the speed chart. But now it's essentially, well, he's at least felt the car, but eight laps gets you next to nothing. He was 27th on the speed chart, only eight laps. You learn nothing. So if we want to talk about who benefited from
David Malukas,
who was hurt most by the rain and who was helped most, David Malukas. I think I mentioned that last week, that his best case scenario was rain the entire time. So he is only eight laps behind where he would have been from that car. And there was still some running in the car done that can kind of help him learn. And their cars are going to be fine. You know, the Air McLaren cars are strong. So we know the car is there. They didn't need to develop that. So there's what we know on that front. Yeah. So that's still a TBD moving forward. Prema was announced. So this is one that a lot of people have known about. I didn't have it, you know, into a report, but so many people have told me and others this was a very poorly kept secret. And one of the reasons that we knew, and what I would consider pretty good sources, there are other entities trying to come up with extra engine leases for next year, and they were being told no. So that was some of my sourcing, and I assume others. That's why the paddock knew, because when they would go to Chevy and say, hey, we're thinking about adding an extra car next year, they were told no, because Prema is coming and they have two. So that is significant. This team, you were in there for the press conference. I'll let you kind of explain their background just a little bit.
Well, they've won championships with drivers and their teams. It's just unbelievable what they've won, 80 championships or something ridiculous like that, or, you know, just some astronomical number. And they have been, those are junior formulas at various levels. They've been successful, and a lot of big name drivers have driven for them, won championships with them. You go through the Formula One paddock, I think I counted 7, 8, 9 drivers that are on the Formula One grid right now that have been Prema drivers. Felix Rosenquist has, among others. So they have terrific, you know, experience at that level. I don't know if this is a fair comparison, but from what they've done in Europe, very Carlin-like. Carlin, and that, to me, there's a comparison in terms of success. You know, and I'm sure someone with more European background would argue and debate those two comparisons or that comparison. But been very successful and are coming here with a two-car operation. Piers Phillips, we've seen at Ray Hall and the Schmidt teams. You know, we're going to see him lead the program. I had a chance to speak with him pretty extensively after the press conference. You know, he's as much as anyone responsible for Robert Wickens getting on the grid with Schmidt. Worked very closely with Robert. Won a pole the very first time out of the box. So pretty good at identifying talent. Not that
Christian Lundgaard was
Christian Lundgaard
the only one, but he was one of the ones that won Christian Lundgaard in that Ray Hall car.
Yeah. You want to be careful about who you credit. You know, it isn't always one person that brings someone, but certainly was very much in favor of Lundgaard, was very much in terms of Wickens. And so those are two good decisions or support on his behalf. You know, he was saying, look, I mean, it doesn't have to be a veteran and a rookie. Maybe I come here with two rookie drivers. Maybe, you know, we find two people that we've had in our system that we have.
Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Everything I've heard says they really want a veteran, and then they are open to a development driver for the second season.
Well, that's what they said in the press conference. And then when we talked on the side, he said, there's no reason why we couldn't come here with two rookies. You're going to learn things. And the world today is such that, you know, drivers can jump in and learn a new series very quickly. We've seen it from Pelot. We've seen it from Lundgaard. We've seen it from Robert Wickens. There's no, you have to be in the IndyCar development series. There's no, you have to be a veteran here. You can jump in and be quick. Ilott was quick right away. So, you know, it can be done. The point is, he's not ruling either path out, but he did say that, you know, we're going to know these driver things before too long. I was also interested to know where they're going to set up shop. They're going to be in Indy very quickly. I was trying to think of the spaces that might be available to them. He said it's already secured and they're already working on it. But a two-car team, Chevy powered, and at this point they're not working toward a partnership with another team, alliance, if you will. They're going to do this the way they've done other programs, and IndyCar is a natural next step for them. You'll get to the fact that this would bring the car count to 29. This would be huge for the sport, but it comes with some challenges as well. Pit road space, you know, just the driver or the engine allotments that you referenced, other teams wanting to enter more cars. There are some challenges that still need to be worked out, but it's very exciting news.
And we'll save this for another day, whether, you know, this is all part of the charter plan. Is that one of the incentives for that we really don't want more than 25 cars? So we're going to kind of encourage people to go away. That would be, you know, and this one of the proposals would be 25 are locked in and then four would be competing for two. I wouldn't like that if I was the four. That would basically, to me, be saying, we want you to go away. I'll believe that when I see it. I know that there's no room at Mid-Ohio. There's no room at Toronto. Maybe there's a way to figure it out. You know, there's always paving. There's always concrete. And you can add some for what might just be a temporary situation. It might just be a one-year situation. A couple of tweets on this topic. Paul says, IndyCar does not always seem to be as well-financed a series as other racing series. So is the arrival of Prima good for the series, or does it split existing sponsorship, prize money, and other funding into smaller amounts per team? There are some believe that we really don't need 29. We'd be better served with 24 or 25 stronger teams. Might it split? Maybe. I also think they have some financing coming from other avenues. So I don't know that this is necessarily going to impact on the sponsorship department, some of these other teams. Personnel, this is another team competing. Yeah, you get your people locked in because they're hiring. Lynn, formerly the Spurs fan, says, how much of an impact will Prima have on their first season in 25, or will they be another Carlin Racing? So others have brought that up, and not just Twitter questions. I've seen that mentioned. It's going to be a challenge. I'll say this, there's no guarantee that they're ready. You know, we've unfortunately seen a lot of announcements over the years that don't come to fruition for one way or another. This is a mighty task. Now, they've been working behind the scenes. How much have they done behind the scenes? That's the key. But starting to be ready 10 months from now, if they just recently started, very, very difficult. But I think they've been working on this for 5 or 6 months. So I expect they'll be there. But year one is probably going to be a little bit difficult. Part of it always depends on how much money do you have? You know, there's a potential landing spot for Alexander Rossi and Callum Ilott. They've both driven for Prema next year. There's your veteran. And then you bring in this year's F2 champion who sees no path in Formula One, and you're off and running. All right, we'll get to some other tweets and more coming up in just a moment and start to see what we missed too. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Pato Award, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, through the magic of Plausibly Live, we have jumped from, say, a little afternoon to now 5 o'clock Eastern Time, and I'm going to do my best golf broadcaster impression now because I'm going to try not to annoy the entire Delta Lounge in the Atlanta airport. I looked for the most out-of-the-way spot I could find. You know, they have some that have basically like little phone booths, but the two I peeked in didn't have anything. So I found a secluded area with a wall in front of me, and I'll try to annoy as few people as possible. So as of 5 o'clock, I still don't know who's driving the number 6 officially. I think it's Teo Pourchaire, but I've not seen a release, so stand by on that. Maybe by the final segment, we will have that. What else? I found out this afternoon we are going to see the new updated lightweight aero screen this weekend at Long Beach for IndyCar. So part of it was there, I think, at St. Pete. Now this is more of it, all somewhat designed to account for extra weight with the hybrid that is going to be coming in at some point this summer. So, you know, this takes something like 15 pounds or whatever it is off of the car. So they'll add that back when the hybrid comes in. But for now, lighter, maybe a little bit quicker, and just something to kind of keep an eye on. And why this also matters this weekend is that means the setups could be just slightly different, slight differences in how the car performs. From what I've been told, no one's really noticed a big difference, but just something to keep an eye on, that it's not exactly the same anytime you make any kind of changes. We're also going to see the split groups with a bit of an adjustment that we saw at St. Pete for the first practice time, so they get more clean track time. I think this time around for the first practice, Friday afternoon, really Friday evening, Eastern time, it'll be an all skate, everybody on track for the first 45 minutes, and then a little break, and then half the field gets 10 minutes, and they'll stop the clock to a certain extent or a certain point for red flags. And then the second group gets another 10 minutes, and I believe it said that rookies are eligible in all sessions. So that is something we will see this week as they continue to try to do some cool things and experimenting for what works the best. Also, I don't know if I mentioned that this weekend, you probably know, but IMSA is at Long Beach this weekend too. So that's one of the reasons that this event is cool, because you kind of see the motorsports community all come together. They will race on Saturday, late afternoon, early evening Eastern time, and that is also on USA and also on Peacock. Always like the notes that Chad 200 sends out via Twitter. 39 of the 48 races at Long Beach, this is more than just IndyCar, have one been won by a driver starting inside the front two rows. Andretti has won 6 of the last 13, 5 different drivers. So I like those notes. So that is always of interest. Let's sneak in a few Twitter questions from Gregory. With talk of bumping cars at other tracks, do you think bump cars will get points? Could that be a solution for charters at the 500? Maybe remove one-offs from the points and pay them to full-time entries. No, I don't think that's going to satisfy the people that would like to have guaranteed entries. This is about money. This is about satisfying your sponsors. Let's face it, if you are in, most of the time, if you're in peril of getting bumped from the Indy 500, you're probably not in the mix for the championship. And obviously, taking points away from part-time entries, that doesn't matter. They're not there for the points. Yes, points do matter if you're trying to stay in the leader circle in the top 22 or top 25, but I don't think that's going to be the answer. It could be a help. You know, beyond that, if you shared more revenue, but I think they already get part of the leader circle just by showing up if they're a full-time team. I hope they don't go down this path. You know, something I've wondered is, a lot of people think this is Roger Penske's idea, in part because he brought it up before he bought the Speedway. But I'm starting to wonder if this is just something he sees and Penske Entertainment sees as speaking out for fellow team owners. And if they feel like they're doing what their constituency wants. And Mark Miles made mention of that recently, that their latest charter discussion did not include guaranteed entries. But from what I gathered from what he said was that received a lot of pushback. So I think the teams are maybe pushing for this more than Roger Penske, and Penske Entertainment are going to push for it. It certainly provides some certainty, but I'm wondering if the team should think about it this way. Does it devalue one of their other assets that they can sell? Qualifying. How interesting is qualifying going to be if it's just for positions and not the drama of making the race or not? And then I still say that if 33 matters, this is not the path to go down. It almost certainly is going to make it harder to get 33. If you are a one-off team, it is going to be difficult to convince you to want to go and do that. And to add extra cars as well. That'd be my fear. Okay, we get some certainty for some full-time teams, but we may not have 33 for much longer, or they're going to have to spend money to subsidize some of them. So I hope that reason wins out on this one and they find some other options to be able to move past this and keep that tradition alive of, yeah, I know it may not be the fastest 33 with two-day qualifying in the current format, but you kind of get the idea. You have to earn your way in to the Indy 500. iFan Sports Network asks, will Caitlin Clark wave the flag at Indy or other role? I'm sure she will be invited, and certainly you have that link with Gamebridge, that ask is definitely going to be there. She was great at Iowa a couple of years ago, as I think she was already a representative for Hy-Vee in that role. I looked up the schedule yesterday, and the Fever are on the road on Saturday nights. And WNBA teams travel commercial, so that makes it a little bit tougher. That means as of now, I'm sure Gamebridge can arrange this to get, and hopefully they bring the rest of the team home as well on Saturday night in a charter. But if she wants to do it and they can figure it out, I'm sure she would be involved in that category. What else from Patrick Stankus? With Coyne giving Harvey an extra race this weekend in the 18, what do you think the chances are of Siegel or Legg struggle to find speed leading up to qualifying for the 500 that Coyne would put Harvey in one of those seats? My guess is no, because this is going to be a financial decision. You see, the only real big revenue that Dale Coyne Racing has right now is from Nolan Siegel and Catherine Legg for the Indy 500. They've essentially, my guess is, paid for those seats. So unless they said, we're not doing well, we want you to put somebody else in the car, I think it's sink or swim with them. Now, Jack Harvey would be there in support, but those kind of changes usually happen when the team has hired someone or the team has a sponsor in that regard. Okay, we'll see what we missed, and how about some details of the Burger Bash, too, coming up in a moment on Trackside.
Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment. Not a lot of time, so here's what I'll use this for. We mentioned last week an announcement for this year's Burger Bash, and this year it is delivered by Cluster Truck. It still benefits the Indiana University Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center. It's coming up again the same day, Monday, May 20th, from 5:30 until 8. This time it's at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, outside the main gate, Gate 1, the roundabout, 16th in Georgetown, 16th in Crawfordsville, still free. We have VIP tickets available for free food and drink delivered by Cluster Truck, $125 each. I believe I've tweeted a link to that at KevinLee23. We have sponsorships available, all the proceeds going to the IU Cancer Center, so that's going to be really cool. We'll do the show live. We'll have a lot of drivers there and a lot of fun and trying to raise money for cancer research. And one new wrinkle this year we're doing that won't cost you anything. And Jackson Lee, my son, tweeted a link to this. The Cancer Center is a primary sponsor of his. So they are looking to simply, putting it mildly, grow their database. They're looking for people that love racing and hate cancer and want to support them in any way. So you'll be added to an email list and you can learn more about the ways that you can help prevent cancer. There are some things that are treatable with early detection, some things we can change our lifestyle. They want to educate us as well. And then obviously they're always looking for people to support. So this is the Bricks to Beat Cancer program, and we'll put you your name or a first name of someone you want to recognize that has fought cancer or remember them for their fight on a backdrop of the Burger Bash. It's cancer.iu.edu/go/JLR. And I tweeted that, Jackson tweeted that, send me a note, and we can get that to you as well. It doesn't cost anything. It's just simply putting in your email address, and that is a way you can help without it costing you anything at all. And I'll send out a link for all more information at some point, figure out a way to distribute that all in one spot. That's all for tonight. Don't know when we're back next week. It is dependent on the Pacers playoff schedule, so it could be Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Hope you can join us from Long Beach this weekend on Peacock or USA or on the radio, and we'll talk to you next time on Trackside.